Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, I can't quit you, babe. But I got to put you down for a while. Well, you know I can't quit you, babe. But I got to put you down.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us once more on Knuckles and Gloves Boxing Radio. I'm Patrick Connor of Knuckles and Gloves, my website, and The Fight City, a couple other places. The Boxing History page on Facebook, for instance, and the Boxing History account on Twitter. These are important things, people. They're worth mentioning. That being said, today we are going to be recapping. We're going to be talking about Andre Ward's big and controversial win over Sergey Kovalev this past weekend on HBO pay-per-view. My buddy Bryn Jonathan Butler is going to be joining me just in a moment, and we'll get down into the thick of things. But in the meanwhile, it really cannot be emphasized enough, especially if we're going by social media trends and the things that people are talking about within the boxing community. It really almost can't be said enough how controversial and just how much of a hot button issue this rematch was and the ending was, and just kind of the way everything turned out. And it really was unfortunate as far as how it all just kind of developed. But at the end of the day, we now, at least for now, have Andre Ward as certainly one of the top few pound-for-pound fighters in the world. I guess it just kind of depends on how you measure these things. But there's really no question that he has to be among the top few. That being said, here's Bryn Jonathan Butler. Bryn, how are you, my friend?
Just catch me up. You were saying we're talking Ward should be in the top few of the pound-for-pound?
Oh, yeah. I would think so.
Yeah. Oh, no, I do. I do. I think he makes a really strong case for being number one after these last two fights.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it all just depends on what you value, because I know certain people are all about what have you done for me lately. Others are about how active guy, you know, it just, I guess, depends on what you value with the whole pound for pound thing, and everybody's list is subjective and different, et cetera, et cetera. But I would have to think that he's got to be among the top, like, two or three. If you don't have him in the top two or three, then you're an asshole.
Yeah. I mean, just based on resume accomplishments, excuse me, recent accomplishments. I mean, do I think Vasily Lomachenko has more talent and ability than Ward? Yes, but I don't think his resume is remotely comparable. So I think that Ward deserves, you know, the nod over that. But, you know, I think that you could make a strong argument that Ward's resume in the latter half of his career is a lot stronger than, say, Mayweather's was. I think Mayweather really benefited from being the A-side as far as protecting his zero in a way that was not present with the first half of his career, where he was really forced to fight everybody and some really difficult fights. I mean, I was just watching the second Castillo fight. First Castillo fight, I thought he lost. He was outthrown. Higher landing percentage for Castillo and landed more punches. I just thought he lost that fight. Second fight, very close. But would Floyd take a rematch of a fight like that in the second half of his career? Would he have taken the fight in the first place? I don't know. The closest we saw was sort of some trouble with Maidana, whereas, you know, Ward is taking a really difficult challenge with Kovalev when he's 32 years old, you know, slowing down a little bit. A lot of injuries are piling up. So Ward, you know, the Super Six and stuff like that, Ward was not favored to win that. So I give him a lot of credit for what he's accomplished.
You really do have to give him some credit. And I'm kind of one of the people who's been arguing for a while that, look, we can't really go back like 10 years and start giving a guy credit now for what he did 10 years ago or however many years ago and stuff like that. I mean, it counts. It counts toward their overall resume or their Hall of Fame, whatever you want to say it count towards, it counts, but it doesn't count towards who they are right this second. And my biggest issue with Andre Ward over the last few years, or one of my bigger issues with Andre Ward, was his inactivity. And not only his inactivity, but what I felt was just his acceptance of his inactivity. He talks a big game, like he wants to fight all the time, and he wants to do this, and he wants to do that, but he's never really, in the last handful of years, shown a palpable, he's never really given a palpable effort that I can see toward actually fighting 3-4 times a year, or whatever it is. And he also seems to have kind of fallen into that mindset about what he deserves, what he thinks he should get, you know, versus what's realistic. And those are the things that I think are really, that bothered me most about Andre Ward. You know, this is all obviously aside from the Kovalev fight, but you really do have to give him credit as a fighter. I mean, you can't fake the funk for that long. You know, it's one of those things where you see people rhetorically and, you know, they throw out a lot of hyperbole about that guy's a bum, this guy's shit, this guy's overrated, he was always this, he was never that. You just can't really fake the funk at that level of the sport for that long. It just doesn't happen. You know, there's something there. And it at the very least, this controversial stoppage is hopefully making some people stop and recognize that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big issue with people giving him the recognition he deserves is he just makes it difficult to cheer for him. And there is a popularity contest element to boxing, as there is with running for president, or, you know, being a successful movie star, you know, or author, or any number of things. Your charisma, and I think that he is, relative to his ability as a boxer and willingness to take difficult fights and the way he's come out on top every single time, he is one of the most charismatically impaired athletes, period, not just boxers, in a long time. And, you know, the number, like, I mean, the idea that Adrian Broner is, I think, amongst boxing writers would be a consensus if you said he's more popular, more commercially viable than Andre Ward. I don't know who would give you an argument to say no, because where is any evidence to support that Ward is marketable? If anything, you're getting, you know, landmark indications that he is horribly unmarketable. You know, to have a fight like the first one and then a rematch get less of an audience than the first fight, which had dismal numbers. You know, 160,000, but Chavez Canelo does over 1 million. It's astounding. Like, the futility is astounding as far as having him connect to an audience, and yet he's making $6.5 million from Roc Nation. So, I mean, he should be very grateful. Is sort of my point on that front.
Yeah, there's just really no justification to be paying Andre Ward millions and millions of dollars beyond just the talent aspect, or the, you know, but he's really good, or but he's pound for pound. Those things don't necessarily translate to money, as much as we would like them to, but they just don't really translate to money all of the time. And especially with Andre Ward, we've had this discussion, we've said it time and time again, it's just he's not a draw. Whatever the case may be, if whether it's that people don't really like his style, whether it's people don't like his personality, I don't know. But he's not a draw, and I'm not really sure how to change that, or if this verdict changes that much. I mean, I almost feel like Andre Ward would be, at least for himself, better served to play this up. And I think he almost would have been better served to be like, go up to the mic and be like, yeah, I hit him low, so fucking what? What are you going to do? I won the fight.
Right.
Like, that would have been almost like people going, oh my God, are you serious? You know, that would have been something. But there's, like you said, I think it was on the last show, it was, you know, make the fans feel something. And Andre Ward, unfortunately, doesn't really make anybody feel anything most of the time. So,
no,
it's a struggle.
It really is, and I totally agree with you. I think he now is so, I don't know, just in this foxhole-like mentality against those, that the perception that he is unmarketable, that I don't know who he would be as a person if he was marketable, whether it be as a popular figure or as a heel. I just think he's this kind of, I wonder if it goes back a little bit, you know, some of the stuff he talked to me about as far as being biracial and going with relatives to a swimming pool or, you know, out of town and that kind of thing, and experiencing that sense of, I don't fit in with either group, either ethnic group of what my parents are comprised with. He's kind of manifested the same thing with his boxing career, despite, as we're saying, such incredible success. You know, he has an all-time great resume of just not just who he's fought, but who he's beaten. You know, he's beaten everybody, and he's fought a lot of times where he was not the favorite. He's always found a way to come out on top. Nobody has ever said that Andre Ward is in possession of the fastest hands in boxing. Nobody's ever said he's a puncher. Nobody said he's a great athlete. He just keeps winning because of how smart he is, how tenacious he is, how dedicated he is, all these things that you think would lead to him being incredibly popular because it would be so identifiable from like a blue collar perspective, the way, you know, boxing has always been pushed as that these guys, you know, work their asses off and, you know, give up so much to do what they do and take more risks than any other athletes. And it just doesn't happen for him. You know, and I agree. I mean, we haven't begun to talk about the fight as far as there was a controversial aspect to this with numerous low blows. But that being said, and I put up a GIF of anybody saying this was a borderline low blow to conclude the fight that Ward landed against Kovalev. I mean, Kovalev below the belt line had the letter B. And Ward's glove clearly hits the bottom of the B, you know, so whether it hit him in the balls or the dick, I don't care. Like, try tapping yourself there and see how it feels, let alone taking a fucking really wound up hard right hand from a world-class light heavyweight. And then people are like, well, he didn't complain. Yeah, I don't think it's going to really inspire Clarence Darrow to come back from the grave to make the case of, like, look here, Weeks. Clearly an infraction has happened here, and I deserve 5 minutes and a penalty against it. Like, he's just got fucking shellacked, and it was like the fifth or sixth time in the fight. Well, not, I think there were four times that I saw. So I guess my point with that just is, all that being said, it was Ward who was coming on tremendously in the eighth round, and Kovalev was clearly fading. Ward landed a breathtaking right hand that just came out of nowhere. Kovalev, first time we've ever seen him really hurt from a shot, other than being hit in the balls. And, you know, there was every indication that that fight was going to be stopped and mentally and willfully broke Kovalev's spirit. And we've never seen that before. We certainly didn't see it in the first fight. So, it was just a tremendous performance. I actually was just pointing out the low blow to say, give Kovalev the 5 minutes to recover from it so that Ward gets a clean knockout, which he clearly seemed to be on his way to getting. That being said, we saw Joshua Klitschko, where it clearly looked like it was going to go one way. It went another way. So we need to keep that in mind about, you know, that Kovalev, you know, people were saying Kovalev, you know, he'd given up, he'd stopped fighting, he was sort of showed the referee, like there was no indication that he was showing the referee that he wanted to continue fighting. Wait a minute, he was still throwing punches a second and a half before that punch landed and the fight was stopped. So I don't understand what was in Weeks' mind about prematurely, in my mind, prematurely stopping that fight, because Kovalev was still fighting. You know, he took that right hand flush. It's not like he took a knee. It's not like he looked like he was giving up. You know, he was trying to find his way back. We saw that with Joshua getting flattened. We certainly saw that a million times with Arturo Gatti. Why doesn't Kovalev merit the benefit of the doubt? He fought for, you know, 8 rounds. He was more active than the first fight. So that seemed to me a little bit unjust on his behalf. Just because I think that the fight deserved, because both guys were working so hard. They're both tremendously high on the pound for pound list. They're in their primes. Let's see where this would actually go. I didn't like to see that happen, and I'm aware that we just saw a former UFC fighter get killed in the ring. Unfortunately, I don't recall his name. He was Canadian, and it was in Edmonton. So I'm not going to be really upset about any fight being stopped prematurely when somebody looks hurt. But, hey, right. And that fight, I almost warn listeners not to watch that fight because it's so brutal. Totally unnecessarily brutal. That guy had absolutely no business being in a boxing ring whatsoever. My God, it's just so sad that guy has a wife and kids. Ugh, what a waste that something like that was sanctioned. But I don't know. I think that Ward showed a lot more than he did in the first fight, and it was a little bit of a shame for that conclusion to happen, especially right after the Rigondeaux fiasco with the late punch after the bell.
I'll start out by saying, well, you're right in that we didn't even really get to talking about the fight. We were kind of focused on Ward.
Right.
It's easy to focus on Ward and the kind of the shortcomings, and it's kind of that has almost become an easy narrative. When it comes to Andre Ward fights, it's far easier to talk about Andre Ward and the shit we don't like about him rather than actual fights. But, man, what a fiasco. What just an absolute fiasco that pay-per-view card was. From the opening bouts were not awful, just one-sided. That in itself, not a travesty or anything like that, but just not competitive, not particularly entertaining or fun. The co-feature with Rigondo ended badly. We got a total public flogging of the Nevada State Athletic Commission chief, Bob Bennett, who apparently does not know the first fucking thing about boxing. And we got to see that on the pay-per-view hosted in the state that this guy is controlling boxing in. And then we got the main event, which just, it did not end ideally. No matter if you're an Andre Ward fan or a Sergey Kovalev fan, it didn't end ideally. Oh, and one thing I did skip, and I was tweeting about this live during the event, but holy shit, can they not find people who can sing national anthems? Like, what is going on? I'm not a great singer, but the dude who sang the person who sang the Russian national anthem just absolutely shat the bed. And then the lady who sang the U.S. national anthem, like, shat the bed and then peed the bed. It was awful. It was just bad. So the whole thing just really felt badly put together or badly planned for. I don't know for sure. I really walked away from this whole pay-per-view going, Jesus, that was like a burden on my day to watch. And I mean, I almost never feel like that. And it's just so disappointing because I was hoping that the whole pre-fight storyline about the promotion being bad and not hearing anything about the fight, I was hoping that the main event was going to make up for all of that and that people were going to be going like, yeah, well, you know what? It was such a great fight and such a great matchup that, oh, well, who cares? In retrospect, nobody gives a shit. But instead, we got just a really, really controversial ending. And on top of that, one of the worst things about it all was that the fight itself until that point was actually pretty good. There were shifts of momentum. Both guys were kind of swinging back and forth. Scorecards were all over the place on Twitter. And Facebook. I was kind of looking around, and some people had it like they're like, after 5 rounds, 4-1 Kovalev. After 5 rounds, 3-2 Ward. And I'm kind of like, holy shit, this is a crazy spread. And if we go to the cards, this is just going to be terrible. Like, just the whining, because nobody's going to be happy. But we didn't even get there. It was a competitive fight, but my issue with the ending here I kind of have a difficult time taking a super strong stance either way. And at first I was kind of like, live as it happened, I felt, oh, those weren't that low. The camera was kind of on the other side of the, it was kind of sideways, so you couldn't see perfectly. And a big part of the problem was that Kovalev was doubled over. And I couldn't see it initially what he was doubled over from in real time. And I thought it was another body punch. And I thought, oh, all right, well, here comes more body punches. There they are. And he's, okay, it stopped. Makes sense. And then when they replayed it back, I was like, oh, all right. Yeah, those are fairly questionable. Damn. I really wanted to ride the borderline quote, but they were riding low. They were going low, and there's no question about it. How low and what should have been done about it is kind of a different story, and that's where it gets kind of murky and opinions start entering the equation and ugh, subjectivity. But it just wasn't the right call. The action probably should have been stopped, even if there aren't standing eight counts. I kept seeing that line repeated, give him a standing eight count. Most states have totally done away with a standing eight count. It's just not a thing anymore, but it's the referee's discretion to stop the action. That's probably what should have happened. It's just, I think that we need to really be pushing for referees and officials to, if we're going to be erring, we need to be erring on the side of the thing that is the least likely to be difficult to change. You know what I'm saying? Like a knockout is going to be really difficult to overturn unless it's really, really obvious. And we've seen that a number of times that fights just don't really get overturned. Like it's rare. Oh, yeah, that was a lot of rambling and I didn't really come to any conclusions, but this is a tough one. It really is.
Yeah, no. I mean, I agree with you. It's complicated, and there's an interesting distinction that seems to have been made with, like, Rigondeaux. That fight is being or was reviewed and now overturned and is being listed as a no contest on the basis of this scientific means of ascertaining that the punch was late. That, you know, you watch the replay and you see the punch came late. No question, it did. Whereas the Ward Kovalev, like any protest, it's all about the judgment call of the referee. So it's a little weird to me. Like, I mean, fair enough. Like they are two separate things. But I mean, are they? Like, shouldn't the referee's call at the time of like Rigondeaux, you know, both these guys are punching after the bell or whatever? Like, I don't know. It's just seems a little bit arbitrary.
Well, and it seems kind of – usually the whole process is – man, the Nevada State Athletic Commission is really just under the microscope for this whole – for that whole event and not in a good way. Usually the general process is a protest has to be filed. It has to – you know, you have to basically jump through a bunch of hoops. There's red tape. You got to go to court or you have to go to, you know, a commission hearing – or several hearings in some cases, and this is like a process. And so then to hear that the Rigondeaux thing was just overturned kind of on a whim, I mean, God, I'm torn because on one hand, I want action. I want people to be like, well, let's see. I don't want them to say, let's see what we can do and let's see how this turns out. I want them to say, no, wrong call, overturn that shit. But this is the kind of process that's in place or that we're familiar with or that's been set up is that, again, it's a kind of a lengthy thing where things get examined fairly, at least as I understand it, in detail. And to have it just kind of be like, nah, you know, we looked at some tape, it's overturned. Or, you know, it's made a no contest or no decision or whatever it is just, it does seem really arbitrary and just kind of out of the blue. And so I'm just kind of imagining what would happen if we got that same kind of thing with the Ward Kovalev fight where somebody the next morning said, hey, you know, by the way, you know, we were watching out in the HBO truck and we decided now I think we're going to DQ Ward after all. I mean, it's just that this is just kind of a funky way of doing things, man, and it makes us look bad. It makes boxing just look so disorganized and stupid sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, okay, a no contest. I mean, if you're saying it's after the bell, when does it go from a no contest to being viewed as a disqualification? I'm not totally clear on that. Are you?
No, like I'm not. I mean, well, as I understand it, there's subjectivity in there because you have to figure out whether or not you felt the guy did it intentionally or maliciously, and that's what generally determines the DQ. But again, it's subjective. How do you know that? And on top of that, like you said, they're both punching. And then you add on the extra little sprinkle of the dude totally fucking faking the knockout. I didn't see that in real time. And then on the replay, I was like, oh, Jesus. Oh, no. He turned and said something to him and then fell back in a controlled manner so that he didn't hurt himself. It was like, oh, man, no. I mean,
yeah,
dude, why? Why? It's, well,
no, I mean the punch was, there's no question the punch was late, but I don't really understand why the referee didn't just say, give him 5 minutes to recover or whatever. Like, I mean, this taking a dive kind of thing, like you're saying, like faking, like clearly he got hit with a fucking sledgehammer in the jaw. Like, I mean, that was a serious shot that Rigondeaux landed. But is it really to the benefit of the, you know, paying customers that you just stop the fight immediately and it's ruled a knockout? Like, I feel like give him 5 minutes to recover, you know, or 10 minutes or 15 minutes. Like, I'm not sure exactly what kind of leeway the referee has in that type of situation, according to the Nevada Athletic Commission. But just to stop the fight, so we, you know, have two fights that kind of end that way, seems like there possibly could be alternatives to dealing with that type of situation, or else, you know, something like this undefeated guy who's had 25 fights and 75% of them are knockouts gets to protect his record by, in essence, you know, taking a dive, taking a bit of advantage of a situation. More so, I think, than an argument you could make that Rigondeaux was taking advantage by throwing that late punch. I mean, late punches were thrown by both of them, and you know, you watch that in real time. It happens really fast, and you see those kind of situations happen all the time with a number of fighters. I mean, Evander Holyfield, like fucking 40% of the rounds that he fought, he punched after the bell with opponents. He's a really dirty fighter. Like, I mean, a lot of people, he's always seen as the victim with Mike Tyson, rightly so, with getting his ears bitten off, but Holyfield was absurdly dirty with the way he used his head and the way he punched after the bell. I mean, as was Tyson throwing elbows, and Tyson threw after the bell quite frequently as well. I think it'd be really fair to say Tyson was a dirty fighter, but Rigondeaux has never been a dirty fighter, and I didn't see any kind of intent to, you know, blindside a guy. And, you know, the idea that some fans were saying, you know, protect yourself at all times sort of thing. Yeah, but when does that stop and it becomes a late shot after the bell that's just a clear foul begin? Like, I don't know, it just seems like there's such a – with a lot of fans, it does seem like if you're for a guy, you'll just defend everything they do. And if you're against them, no matter what they do, they're always wrong.
Bingo.
I mean, there was so much talk with Ward where – people were saying, you know, this wasn't even remotely low, the punches he was landing. What are they talking about? They're all borderline and everything. And I'm like, look, the B that he was hitting that was covering Kovalev, at least his cock or possibly his balls, was several inches below the bottom of his belt line. How are we having a discussion that this is a borderline shot? Like borderline low. It's not borderline. It's well, it's like 4 or 5 inches below the fucking line. It's like, but they don't like him. So that's the end of that. And as I mentioned earlier, I put a GIF of what exactly where the punch landed from the perspective that Weeks had looking at it. And still 30% of the people that were Ward fans were just like, no, it's borderline. Like this Zapruder film, like his head is going back to the left or, you know, whatever. But I'm just like, people just see what they want to see.
That's pretty much what it comes down to. You know, you pick a stance and then the argument suits that stance rather than, or you know, the interpretation of the evidence suits that stance rather than taking in all of the evidence and then forming an educated opinion, which is generally how it should work. But, you know, I would love to, I don't really like Andre Ward, so it would be really easy for me to just kind of point and say, bad guy, dirty. There were actually things that he was doing throughout the fight that I thought were, I don't want to say worse than the low blows per se, but they were more pervasive and probably had a greater effect on how the fight turned out that also were not, like, clean. He was doing a lot of kind of like opportunistic clinching. That's pretty much nothing new for Andre Ward. You know, anytime Kovalev was getting his jab going, he was leaping in and clinching and kind of muscling him around and stuff like that. And again, not that out of character for Andre Ward, but still outside of the rules. And using his forearm, kind of rubbing his glove on Kovalev's face type of thing. Nothing like awful, but that kind of, you know, like instead of headbutting, like in the clinch, rubbing your head on the other guy's face. I've had this done to me. It doesn't feel good. You know, these are things that happen throughout the fight. And, you know, there's kind of a certain amount of it that's normal, especially if you're a fighter who's physical or if you're a fighter who's smaller or needs to get inside, likes to work inside. There's a certain amount of that kind of thing that's just going to happen and there's nothing you can do about it. And the referee needs to shut his ass up or her ass up about it. But a lot of the time, Andre Ward does things that start straying over that line. And then there are times when he just, like, says, fuck the line and hits low or whatever the case may be. And so those things, just as a whole, I was bothered more by just, you know, the totality of it rather than the low blows. But I think that I don't want to use the whole justification of, well, Kovalev was on his way to losing anyway. But it really did seem like that was the case. Beyond the low blows, there were a number of highly legit body punches that had been coming for several rounds, and Kovalev really looked to be like he was on the downslide very quickly. And then when that right hand came, that was like it took his legs away. Doesn't excuse low blows, doesn't excuse getting dirty, doesn't excuse the referee making a shitty call. Or, you know, making a shitty call and then not being professional enough to say, hey, I fucked up. By the way, that Twitter account's fake, people. That shit that you retweeted like 50 billion times, fake, not real account. Anyway, we haven't heard any of that type of contrition from the NSAC or Weeks, though. So it's just the whole situation is really shitty and, again, highlights, I think, one of the really big problems with boxing. In terms of the officiating and in terms of how it's dealt with and how everything is taken care of, it makes it look really unprofessional.
Yeah, exactly. That's my objection too. It's just I'm not disputing anybody that's a Ward fan. You know, in terms of saying he was on his way to winning, he clearly was. I just think it was a very unsatisfying conclusion that was not respectful of both competitors and what they had to put in to, you know, to be involved with that fight in terms of, you know, all the lead up and everything like that. You want to, you know, you want to give Kovalev a competitive shot, you know, a fair shot to win the fight within, you know, or allow to protect him from being fouled and somebody taking unnecessary, unfair advantage of him. I don't agree with, like, okay, maybe he was tiring out. I don't think he'd given up. I think he was trying to survive. But as we mentioned with Joshua Klitschko, sometimes not only do they survive to get to the scorecards, they can come back and score a knockout. And I saw Kovalev still trying to fight. You know, he wanted to be there. I just personally think after you've been hitting the balls by a really, really hard shot, maybe you're not going to be as alert as you might otherwise be to criticize a foul blow. You know, I think, and I do criticize Weeks for being in a perfect position to see an egregious low blow and not give Kovalev a bit of time to retire. And hey, if he wanted to give up, he could have given up right there and just said, I can't fight anymore or whatever. You know, but I think he deserved that. And I also think that Ward deserved a clean victory that didn't include this as being part of the, you know, contaminating the narrative.
Well, the narrative is definitely highly contaminated. And on top of that, I think that now moving forward, you know, I can't speak to what all of the details were for the negotiations and putting together this rematch, obviously. But it certainly sounded like Main Events had a hell of a time getting Andre Ward to agree to this rematch. Ward took the lion's share of the money, as well, I mean, as he more or less should have, because he won the first fight, which I get. Not 100% in agreement there, but okay. But they had a hell of a time getting Ward back in there. And then once they did get him back in there and signed in, he still seemed to not be very interested in doing any of the promotion. And this wound up being one of his biggest wins. So I just cannot imagine. I cannot imagine that Andre Ward is ever going to be hip to a third fight. Ever. And under pretty much any circumstance. So they can attempt, and on top of that, even if they did overturn it, even if they DQ'd him, I bet you that he still wouldn't want to do it, because he's the type of dude that would be like, nope, I won and I know it, I don't care.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think you're absolutely right. And the other thing with Ward that's going to be interesting is, how long is Roc Nation going to be able to have one of the most amazingly awful business models in the history of sports, like since like that Donald Trump alternative football league? I forget the name of the league.
The USFL?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean,
yeah, the New Jersey like Rebels or some shit like that.
Yeah, yeah. I think, I mean, didn't he have like Herschel Walker out of college, like went straight to his team.
Shit show.
So I mean, like Andre Ward makes $6.5 million for a fight that does maybe 150,000 pay-per-views. Tickets were on Groupon right up until the day of the fight. You know, 40-50% off on tickets. So I mean, I don't know how I'd feel if I was paying retail for seats when they're so desperate to like give away tickets, just because there was just no interest. And Mayweather, oh my goodness, like in announcing this fight, he is just completely sabotaged. I mean, not just Mayweather, Heyman completely sabotaged Ward Kovalev, completely sabotaged Canelo Golovkin, and fighting, you know, for the first time in a long time on a non-Mexican holiday. Like, what a brilliant strategic move. And journalists I've talked to, you know, they've mentioned that, like, at big places, you write about Mayweather and McGregor, you're just getting unprecedented traffic. And you tried to write really meaningful articles about Kovalev Ward, absolutely nothing. You know, they just no interest, despite its incredible relevance to the sport. Like, it's just zero traction. No purchase, even amongst boxing fans. Like, just nobody gave a shit.
Yeah, it really did get overshadowed. And it's not like I saw people saying that, oh, this was done intentionally to, you know, totally sabotage. I don't think that was the case. I don't really think that there was anything anybody could have done, like I said last week, to make Ward Kovalev 2 some kind of event or some kind of, you know, thing that everybody wants to see. It's just not... It wasn't going to happen. There was just so many things going against it in the first place. But the fact that it was announced just totally blew any chance of it making any sort of, you know, little small uptick.
Well, no, and I mean, don't misunderstand me. I'm not suggesting that Kovalev was on its way to a million pay-per-view buy, but you don't believe that Mayweather and Heyman were doing a really calculated strike by blowing out of the water, what, 3-4 days before Kovalev Ward, like just destroyed any kind of last-second buyers to that pay-per-view, and then they've completely undermined, you know, one of the biggest fights that HBO could hope to put on with you know, Golovkin Canelo. I mean, this is really, I've heard some guys who've been pretty accurate in their predictions about pay-per-view make estimates that this could do 4 million pay-per-view buys. And it seems impossible to me, given that this is, you know, pretty much boxing's answer to, like, the Harlem Globetrotters fighting the Washington Generals. But maybe it's enough of a curiosity, you know. But, I mean, it's as meaningless to me as Andy Kaufman picking a woman from the crowd to defend his intergender wrestling championship. It's just not as funny. It's sad. I don't know.
Especially in light of Tim Hague. And I don't mean to use that as I don't mean to, you know, use Tim Hague's death for my own purpose of making a point here. But, I mean, it is an event that's recent and easy to point to. Do I think that Conor McGregor is going to go in and get killed by Floyd Mayweather? No, of course not. That's not what I'm saying. But I think that the larger point and the point you're making is that this is just not legitimate.
It's not. That's exactly right.
And that's the big problem with this. You know, boxing has been doing sideshow shit for a long time. Ever since boxing was boxing, boxing began as a sideshow. You know, like, this is going back to its roots. So to say things like this is boxing, setting boxing back, or this is ruining boxing, it's not doing any of that kind of thing. The point is that it's giving people a very perverse, you know, just kind of bastardized version of what boxing is. And all the while, people will be pointing this and saying, this is boxing, and this is not boxing. And that's, I think, what so many of the hardcore fans and the people who follow the sport and love the sport and, you know, would like things to be legitimate, and this is what we're pointing to at the very least annoyed by, because this is just not legitimate boxing, and it is probably going to be massive, unfortunately.
Yeah, like, no, come on. Boxing comes from, in this country, a bunch of white guys, slave owners, gathering a group of African Americans, putting hoods on them and saying, last guy standing is going to win the change that we throw at you. Like, anybody who thinks that this stuff, like injures
tough
the reputation of boxing's proud history, good luck with that, because it doesn't set it back 2 minutes. If you look back, I mean, Jack London was writing in the New York Times, you know, about black fighters eating watermelon and fried chicken.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, that's where America was at in those days.
Beloved authors, you know, dropping the racist shit all over newspapers is where it was.
Oh, no. So, I mean, Joe Louis, it was all the time, like, pictures of him napping on hillsides and stuff. Like, all the guys do it, you know how they are. They're just so lazy. And it's like, Joe Louis was one of the most dedicated workers, like, that boxing's ever had. You know, like, he was an unbelievable, like, just a tyrant in terms of how hard he drove himself. But they just couldn't have it that you could be disciplined and be African-American. It just was too much of a conflict with all these stereotypical, bigoted, prejudiced views. So, I don't know. And I'm curious with Mayweather, McGregor, how, like, when will race become the dominant narrative? You know, as Mayweather loves to do with opponents, as much as I think McGregor putting it on the table, I mean, let's not forget, like, Mayweather, in kind of nonsensical but very overtly racist ways was going after Pacquiao forever, you know, saying I'm going to make him eat sushi and referring to him as yellow and not cowardly, but yellow as a result of being Asian, loved to wear a sombrero and fight on Mexican holidays and do anything he could to be offensive against Mexicans. I don't know that I've heard him use racist tropes against Mexicans, but definitely like to antagonize them on the basis of, you know, nationalistic pride and that kind of thing. But, I mean, McGregor doesn't seem like it's far, it's beyond the pale for him to interject race into this. So I'm curious. It seems like the table is kind of set for something with this fight to be similar to what we saw with like Jerry Cooney and Larry Holmes, where it seems like that was the last sort of great white hope fighting, a supremely talented black fighter, and race was all over that fight. I wonder, do you see that there could be something similar with this? I don't know that it's happened yet. But it seems like I'm just tensing for it to come up.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. And it wouldn't, it's one of those things that's just not, it's really not that far below the surface. And it's something that, again, when it comes to the history of boxing, it's always been there, always. So
yeah.
I could definitely see it being, you know, summoned forth quite easily. And on top of that, I think that you can point to a handful of occasions where it has been used by perhaps not similar fighters, but fighters in similar positions or fighters who are, I should say contemporary fighters. Bernard Hopkins, for instance, did it a handful of times. He did it against Joe Calzaghe when he was doing his UK press tour. I can't remember which reporter it was, but or which news outlet it was for, but he was doing press for the Calzaghe fight, and in some news trailer, some dude, you know, starts kind of getting what he thought was too close to him, so he turns around and says, starts barking at him, I don't like when white people get close to me, back the hell up, I'm about to get ignorant and all this shit, and I think that that was the exact same media little scrum thing where he said, where he later said, I'll never let a white boy beat me. And then he repeated
right.
it to Joe Calzaghe later on and was, I mean, he basically made this entire thing that really had nothing to do with race whatsoever. It had everything to do with Joe Calzaghe being an undefeated, you know, kind of mouthy dude who'd been wanting to fight Bernard Hopkins forever. But this kind of thing can easily be brought forth. And I think that it's a cheap selling point, but it's a selling point.
Definitely is. No, I mean, it definitely is. It would be nice if they recognize that the fight doesn't need any of that to sell it. You know, that Floyd, kind of like Pacquiao Mayweather, it didn't need to go in that direction to appeal, because you had enough people saying, with that fight at least, you have a slugger, you have a boxer, we don't quite know how this is going to go. There was enough like muddied waters there, which in hindsight is insane that the waters were muddy at all in terms of the outcome, because it probably would have been that way no matter when it happened. But with a fight like this, where there's going to be so much backlash, at least from the boxing media, but I don't even know if the people that are going to buy this fight would even care. I don't think they give a shit about the spectacle. I think, like, maybe it's like Rocky Apollo Creed, you know, like, we know it's not competitive, but it's America, and he's an Italian like Columbus, and this is his one in a million shot or whatever. I mean, I wonder what the bet is going to be that McGregor doesn't just, like, take Mayweather down and choke him out or kick him in the head or something like that. Like, maybe this would be like our generation's version of the ear biting. If like McGregor just found a way totally illegally to just knock Mayweather out, it would be like the biggest statement in fucking sports in the 21st century. If you're just like, yeah, fuck it, I just want to take him out. I don't care about the money. Like, I've got enough money. I just want to be the guy to give all, like, for all the money that people have paid to watch Floyd lose, I'm just going to find a way to do it. Clearly, I can't do it as a boxer, as a conventional boxer, let alone a conventional counter-punching boxer who can spar you or me and probably not look great. I mean, that's a gross exaggeration, but we know that YouTube video of him sparring somebody that is not a notable boxer, and he was clearly outboxed. So imagining what he would do against Floyd is just laughable. I wonder if that's in the realm of possibility in his mind.
Well, you know what? We live in a funny era, Bren. We live in an era where reality is not reality. The truth is not the truth. Facts are not facts. I mean, this video, who is it? Chris Van Heerden, I think, that he's fighting. And Chris Van Heerden, or that he's sparring, Conor McGregor, that is. Chris Van Heerden, and I'm not going to malign the guy. I mean, he basically said it himself on Twitter. He's like, I'm not on Floyd Mayweather's level even. I'm not even sniffing that level. Can't even see that level on the horizon. And I was outboxing the shit out of Conor McGregor. Like, what do you think Floyd's going to do with him? And that's pretty much what it is. This video is up on YouTube for everybody to see. This is fully available for everybody. There's video of Conor doing all of his sparring and all of his training and boxing work and whatnot. It's there. This is pretty easy to see. Whether or not somebody has a discerning eye and knows what that training means, of course, that's a different story. But this is fairly remedial as far as fight mathematics go. Chris Van Heerden, kind of a fringe contenderish type of guy. Floyd Mayweather, sure, retired. All-time great, though. Incredible fighter. Conor McGregor had a couple of amateur boxing sessions back when he was younger in his teenage years. That's it. Otherwise, these motherfuckers are playing with sticks in the park.
Yep.
I mean, I'm just
sounds about right to me.
I'm obviously oversimplifying it, and I love mixed martial arts, so I don't mean to take that, you know, boxing's good, mixed martial arts is bad stance, but it's not boxing, and it's not the same thing. It's not the same kind of specialization of skill. And so go ahead.
I was just going to say, we would be saying exactly the same thing if Floyd was fighting McGregor in an octagon.
Right.
The first thing we would say is, this is a million to one chance. Floyd has absolutely no chance to do anything. He is going to lose in probably under a minute and lose badly and demonstrably. This is a farce. Why are they doing this? Like, et cetera, et cetera. It's nothing against the UFC. It's just if Michael Phelps was leaving the swimming pool to have a home run derby against Yasiel Puig, I'm not interested. I'm not going to take bets.
I know. It's like Roy Jones playing a semi-pro basketball game before going and defending his way. No, that's not the same.
Not quite the same. But I mean, it's any number of these kind of things. You know, like, you know, I'm covering a lot of chess. These guys don't, like, Kasparov is not going to lose against somebody who is, like, almost everybody in the world who's dedicated their life to playing chess, he is still going to fucking crush them. Even if they're in the top 1,000 in the world, he's going to crush them 500 times in a row. You know, other than if you're in the top 10 or top 20 or whatever, he is going to thrash you every single time. It's not like somebody is – like, it just doesn't work this way. And so, I mean – okay, like, the lead up for this, the trailer that they're going to put together for this fight is going to be a lot of fun. I've been watching some of McGregor's public comments to try to promote his fights. He is very entertaining in an obnoxious kind of way, just like Floyd is. Like, they're very shrewd at making you feel something where you are wondering what they're going to say next and all of that. It's a very lowest common denominator, cynical exploitation of like this reality TV age that we're in. But in terms of the actual substance of the fight, it is an utterly, transcendently meaningless contest on every level.
Just like, and you and I both know this well, we know there are many writers, many people within boxing especially, who are just absolutely breathtaking writers, and they cannot get read. Whereas if you put together some little fucked up pictorial about Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor, this shit's going to get thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of shares and all of these kinds of things, because that is just how it works. It popular does not equal better, as we all know. You know, music taught us that many years ago. But it's just, it's a bit of a perversion, and it's going to happen. So it's not like taking some kind of stand or saying, come on, stand up, everybody, and boycott is going to do anything, because people aren't going to. They want to watch it.
No, and that was very hypocritical of De La Hoya, too. You know, De La Hoya put up a contest with Chavez and Canelo that is meaningless as well. It's not as meaningless as McGregor Mayweather, but it's pretty meaningless. It's just it's going to sell well. So it's pretty rich for De La Hoya to come out and say, you need to boycott this for the good of boxing. Come on. Nobody thought Canelo Chavez was going to be an especially competitive fight. That wasn't why it was staged. It was staged because it was going to get 1 million pay-per-views, you know, which, fair enough. If people want to watch it, I don't think there's anything wrong with putting something like that on from time to time. But then don't try to come at Mayweather and get on your high horse and just be like, oh, this is morally repugnant, like what you're impugning and defiling the good name of boxing. Fuck off. Like, it's just complete bullshit. But yeah, it's a weird one, because, you know, I don't know where Floyd goes after this, because, okay, all he wants is $100 million. This is probably the only place he can go, other than, are we going to get Pacquiao? Because what's the alternative? After he, you know, walks through this fight, like just goes for a jog for 12 rounds, other than Pacquiao, who's going to fight? Keith Thurman, where he's going to make $40 million, $45 million, and whoever's going to pay him that money is going to lose money, because it's not going to draw more than Mayweather-Berto, and there's nothing about what's going to happen with McGregor that's going to make Floyd more marketable. Floyd needs a dance partner. Floyd needs to tempt us with either a great show in the lead-up to the fight, which McGregor is going to absolutely guarantee and deliver. Already, that mural in McGregor's gym of him landing like a big shot is, you know, it's funny, you know, it's we didn't see it coming. So like just immediately it's kind of interesting. And it makes you does whet your appetite a bit about what he's going to do next, what he's going to say next. So fine. But other than Pacquiao, where does Floyd make $50 million? And even then, whoever's going to pay him is going to lose money. It's kind of a weird place to go. I'd love to see him fight some, you know, fight Golovkin, fight Thurman, but those are not going to make half the money that he would generate fighting Pacquiao, which I think was meaningless when it happened, because Pacquiao was so far sort of beyond his prime, and it's even more meaningless now. But it's still going to generate, you know, huge numbers, and nothing else is remotely comparable to it, which is kind of frightening.
Yeah, that's just exactly what I was thinking. Like, how disturbing is it that some of the biggest things that the sport of boxing has to offer, some of the most fruitless, some of the most meaningless, some of the most devoid of substance, that's just, it's sad. And I mean, it's not to necessarily point directly to the state of boxing as a sport. And, you know, it's not to decry, oh my God, we've fallen so far. It's not to say that. I mean, boxing always seems like it's not that far from marching right back into the limelight. But still, it's sad.
Yeah. No, it's not encouraging. It's definitely not encouraging. Because it's not like we were saying before, when Adrian Broner and what he's represented as far as, you know, I guess the most euphemistic way to put it is a lack of character, is infinitely more marketable, not infinitely more marketable, but clearly more marketable than Andre Ward, for all that Ward has accomplished, for what he represents as, you know, being a positive role model. I mean, nobody's saying he's most likable or charismatic, but I don't, why would anybody attack what he's accomplished as far as being a good dad, a good husband, and espousing good values, I think. I like that he's questioning, you know, is the only way I can be commercially viable is by resorting to what Floyd has done? I don't want to do that. Now, I don't think that's why he's not commercially viable. Like, I think there is something intellectually dishonest about that comparison, because that's, you know, it's fine to be marketable on the basis of you make me feel that I want to watch you lose, and I am willing to pay to have the opportunity to watch you lose. But there's no reason why, you know, that doesn't explain why people don't want to pay to watch Ward win. And nobody is paying to watch Ward win. It's not something that anybody says, hey, I want to bring my girlfriend and I want to pay $100 so that she can witness this guy winning. Like, I don't know why. It's just not dynamic in any way. It's not meaningful. Doesn't make you feel anything. You're just, I don't know. It's like I was thinking about that. He reminds me a bit of like Carl Lewis, but like Carl Lewis was so good, so dominant, but just almost everything that came out of his mouth was kind of repulsive. You're just kind of like, oh, I wish I hadn't heard him contextualize just his career or whatever the latest accomplishment was. It was always just like, it doesn't give me a good feeling listening to him, sort of thing. I think there's something similar. Like, they're both unequivocally massively accomplished athletes in their respective sports, but they have a real struggle connecting.
There's no question. You know, the proof is in the pudding, because nobody really seems to care. I find it just fascinating that he doesn't really care that anyone seems to care, or at least he doesn't take the steps that someone who cares would take, because we feel like it, at least I feel like you and I feel like we know he cares, but, and we know that it's a show, that we know that he's putting up a show that he doesn't care and that it doesn't bother him. We know that it does, but even though it may, he still doesn't really do anything about it. He can't be asked to change anything that he's doing, or to admit, yeah, that was a mistake, or no, that wasn't the right thing to do, or whatever the case. He's just kind of stuck on whatever the path he's going down. And that's, to me, just kind of strange. But I hope that the boxing world is better with Andre Ward in it. So hopefully he's able to come back and kind of, you know, fight more often. I just don't think that'll be the case. We probably won't see him in action for a while. But it would be better
if he does. I mean, if he's serious about fighting Anthony Joshua, I would love to see that fight. I mean, how on earth does he survive that? I mean, it's one thing Roy Jones fighting, you know, the quiet man, John Ruiz, which still, like, I mean, I watched that fight. I was really scared for Jones to be squaring off against a guy who's nearly 230 pounds and a capable boxer. Not a great boxer, but a capable heavyweight who had dispatched some high-level competition. That was exciting, but that's not even remotely comparable to the sort of size disparity of Ward Joshua. And you heard, like, Hunter, like, being like, we can outbox them. Like, I see flaws that we can exploit. Like, okay, man, up and at them. Love to see it. I mean, if you pull that off, I'm happy to say you're like top five accomplishments in the history of boxing. I'm okay with that. Like, just like prima facie, like, no problem. You dispatch with Anthony Joshua, a guy who's that size, that powerful, that capable. I mean, if Ward is – look at Ward's face after two fights with Kovalev.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't look great. So let's see you do that against a guy who's 250 pounds with 5% body fat, who knows how to hit, flattening a Klitschko. Good luck. Good luck. And I will definitely pay $200 to watch it, too. With no hesitation, I'll be thrilled to pay a $200 pay-per-view to watch that fight.
Hey, Andre Ward had a tough time with how physical and rough Saki Obika was getting with him
right.
a few years ago for a handful of rounds. And he was complaining about, you know, he was using low blows and elbows and all this type of stuff. The point is that Andre Ward is just not big enough, not strong enough, doesn't have the physicality to test that kind of heavyweight. Just like Roy Jones didn't, he wasn't big enough, wasn't strong enough, didn't have the physicality to get in with a Vitaly Klitschko or Lennox Lewis. That's why he didn't challenge Lennox Lewis, because Lennox Lewis was the champion. And John Ruiz
right.
just held the WBA belt. That's why he was like, all right, I'll become a heavyweight champion. And anyway, we all know the story. It's just that, hey, man, if they are really going to do that, then in light of all I've just said, yeah, I'll watch, because I would love to see what kind of tactics, and I do believe that Ward is smart enough to try to figure something out. It's just, it's a question of size. There are weight divisions in boxing for a reason, and I'd love to see it. Yeah, we obviously have huge doubts here.
Yeah, and I'm not saying I would love to watch it because I want to see Ward as a sacrificial lamb. As we've been saying, like, he is an extraordinary, once-in-a-generation talent in ways that have everything to do with things that should be lauded. Like, he was not born to be this good. He has worked his ass off to be this good. And you know, his courage under fire, grace under pressure, all the Hemingway shit, like, he is the biggest example of that that boxing has offered in the last 20, 25 years. Like, Floyd is taking a lot less risk than Ward has to do what they do. And he doesn't get that credit, you know. And, I mean, I think he does from boxing writers, because I've never heard any boxing writer attempt to undermine his accomplishments or his ability or where he deserves to be in the pantheon of great fighters, but fans don't enjoy it. So that's why I think you always see Ward on his heels defending what he's doing. And, you know, when you raise these issues of marketability, he's always like, who says I'm not marketable? Like, well, everybody, because you're not marketable. But
the numbers.
But, you know, if he fought Joshua, if he really, like, as I say, if he is able to figure out a way to win that fight, if he's able to do what Jones did against Ruiz, against Joshua, I really think it would be one of the greatest accomplishments, like, in the history of the sport. Yeah, I mean, outlandish.
It would be massive.
It's totally unprecedented. And if he actually has the temerity to go after that and pursue it, I think it would be amazing for the sport. I mean, it's ridiculous, but it would still be amazing. I almost think, like, even with his powers of overwhelming persuasion to not buy his fight, if that would somehow be nullified and people would just have to watch it because it would be so outlandish.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of on the – it's on the spectrum of attraction, circus, you know, sideshow type of thing like Mayweather-McGregor. It's on the spectrum, but clearly so far on the other side, you know, of the – toward the legitimate side of the spectrum, in that it's an actual fight, but it is kind of tipping into that territory where we're like, God damn. That's a possible thing. Damn. All right. You know, it's just, wow. But if they went for that, you could not ever really question Andre Ward's tenacity. You could never really question his, you know, the the fact that he's putting himself out there. He did twice against Kovalev, and wow, yeah. Just the thought of that
is pretty crazy. And this is you know, 50 times a bigger threat to him than Kovalev. Because, I mean, I don't care what you say about Joshua, but I mean, like, he's so athletic. And you just would think, like, Ward, in what possible way could Ward not be backing up that entire fight?
Yeah, I don't know. I just have to think that if Vladimir Klitschko is having a tough time making a dent, if Dillian White is able to hurt him but can't put him down, I don't know what Andre Ward could do to the guy.
Even Ward landing that right hand that he did against Kovalev, it didn't drop Kovalev. You know, like that right hand was the most perfect punch I think I've ever seen Ward land on an opponent. Still didn't drop him. So
yeah, I don't know, man.
You know, unless he goes, you know, gets away with punch a bigger target for low blows. You know, granted, 6'7" of Anthony Joshua, you know, chop him down. Chop him down, Rocky. I mean, I don't know. What the hell? What's the game plan? Don't get killed. I mean, that would be my game plan in the corner. Okay, Andre, don't get killed.
Shit. Hit the one
Survive.
In the middle.
Hit the one in the middle. Punch him in the balls when Tony Weeks is looking. Because if he's not looking, he may presume that you hit low. As long as he sees it, you're going to be fine. Hit low in full view of Weeks.
The target is just so much bigger that, you know, there's a lot more leeway, I think, there. Make sure Tony Weeks is the ref and you'll be fine.
Exactly. I mean,
Jesus.
We need to overturn those Riddick Bowe fights. You know, all those low blows, you know, when the disqualifications, you know, we need to overturn those. We just need to get Tony Weeks to review the instant replays and be like, looks clean, looks fine to me. Questionable.
Hashtag borderline.
Borderline.
Hashtag borderline.
Borderline. We need to get Madonna could do a cover song. Let's renew her relevance and get her
keep
to
on
do
pushing
like
my punches under the borderline. We're just sick. You know, it was really disappointing to walk away from that pay-per-view last weekend. And you know, before we get out of here, though, I actually do want to ask one thing. Since we had talked about this last week and we had talked about Sergey Kovalev being a kind of a flagship type of fighter for main events, what does main events do now? I mean, and I don't mean to suggest, like, all right, they're going under now. They're no longer a thing. Main events has been around a long time. Kathy Duve is a real smart lady, and I really admire her. I really admire her gumption. I really admire her tenacity in trying to protect her fighter and trying to do what she believes is the right thing for her fighter. But I do think that this loss is a really, really big setback. Whereas Sergey Kovalev before at least had belts to bargain with, and he had a string of knockouts and, you know, a string of really good performances. Now he is walking away from Andre Ward with two losses, one of which was a stoppage loss, right or wrong, and two very unsuccessful pay-per-views, and not really much bargaining power that I can see. How do they go into a potential, even if Adonis Stevenson were still interested, I'm assuming he would be, how do they go into that fight with anything but, all right, you just tell us what to do? How do they argue anything for themselves?
No, they're in a really tough spot. I mean, similar situation to De La Hoya if Canelo gets knocked out. Where do you go? What's the response?
Yeah, it's not a killer.
I mean,
it's just going to be maiming.
It's just tough. I mean, it's kind of, where is Al Heyman after $400 million of venture capital? Like, what is, you know, what is he, you know, how did that go for you? How, you know, how's it?
Yeah, what have we gotten out of this? What have your investors gotten?
Right. So that's a challenge. And I mean, I think Kovalev certainly can go forward and, you know, fight Adonis Stevenson. I guess that's one contingency, is he fights Stevenson, but for another rematch with Ward, like the rubber match, I don't think Ward is going to want another one particularly.
No.
Does Ward want to fight Adonis Stevenson? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I was kind of taken aback by this idea of I want to move up. I want bigger challenges. Well, cruiserweight, there's no challenges that anybody cares about. Heavyweight, okay, like you're going to fight Deontay Wilder? You're going to fight Anthony Joshua? Like it's kind of he's in a strange point too of, you know, he's getting up there in age. He's not, you know, he's got his share of injuries. So I think he's trying to kind of cash in his chips with like some more, you know, maybe one, two, three more big fights.
Yeah.
We discussed it after I interviewed him that one thing with Ward that was interesting is the only inconsistency that I sort of got from him from spending some time with him was when the subject of retirement came up. That's where there was some kind of renegotiation with himself, relitigation. Did I really say this? I don't remember saying this. And his wife would say, no, you said you were going to leave the sport at 30. And I was like, this sounds very familiar from having spent time with your hero, Roy Jones, is you don't want to leave the casino. You don't want to leave. It's not a question of how much you win. You're hooked. You're hooked. And I wonder if Ward is like in his mind, and he hadn't at the time that I was with him, he hadn't specified a number where he was like, this is when it's enough. This accomplishment is enough. This amount of money, this degree of security. I don't have a sense that he knows. Remember that movie Heat, De Niro, Pacino?
Oh, yeah.
So at the end of that movie, I mean, the point of that film is De Niro is on his way to getting away free. It's just like Ward right after this Kovalev fight. You've got the girl, you've got the flight, you know, to safely get away. You've got your fucking iridescent algae waiting for you in Fiji. And yet, who are you without what you do? You don't know. So you leave the car, you abandon all of that, even though it would be total happiness, you need to go back to what you know, where you're doing what makes you you. And even if the cost of that is, you know, enormous. And I think that there's that confrontation that all of these guys who get to that level eventually have to face is who am I without this? And I never had a sense that Ward knew. He gave lip service to it. He said, you know, I want to leave with my legacy, with money, my health. That's going to be my great achievement. But okay, sounds good. Sounds just like Roy Jones Jr., though, doesn't it? Roy Jones would go to classes and talk to kids. And when are you going to stop fighting, Roy? When are you going to stop fighting, Roy? Well, if I ever lost, if I ever lost, you know, maybe one more time. You know, and if it happened again, then I'm done because I don't like to get hit. Well, we know that's just not how it works. It just doesn't, you know, you really have to be Rocky Marciano where even he, I gather there was some pull about coming back, but I loved his answer is if Joe Lewis, my hero, can't make a comeback, then I know there's no way that I could ever make a comeback. So I recognize in humility, I have no business staying in this. When I go to the gym and I feel sick, then it's time for me to go. I may want to stay in this, but it's time for me to go. And I wonder with Ward, 32, a lot more wear and tear than Floyd, and Floyd has had his share of injuries. if at some point this is going to catch up to him, and I thought it might in this rematch. I thought Kovalev, you know, maybe there was conditioning issues and that kind of stuff. And I'm still not sure that there wasn't conditioning issues in the first fight. He was more active in the second fight. I thought he was fighting well. I had him ahead on the cards narrowly. Definitely Ward was on the way back. But I'm very curious to see where things go with Andre Ward, because he's so wound up in this identity of the undefeated guy. If he's really searching for a challenge that provokes a sense of, there's no way you could ever do this, play that down. Let's remember with the first Kovalev fight, like, boy, this is the most dangerous fight of your career. No, it's not. All my fights are dangerous. I fought everybody. Well, okay. But you have fought everybody, but this is a more dangerous guy than them for a number of, I think, reasonable reasons. I wonder if for Ward, I had a sense that he was content to be in that pantheon of great fighters. Maybe he wants to get on top of it. Maybe he wants to outdo Jones. And he cited Jones fighting John Ruiz. Like, I want to do something similar. Well, this wouldn't be similar if he fought Joshua. This would be better than what Roy did. And maybe that's where his ambition or hubris is going to take him and possibly take him down. It's kind of the most interesting thing that I've ever heard him say in relation to his career.
Well, Andre Ward gets interesting. That's a headline.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's tough to, you know, to discuss the fight and discuss the pay-per-view and stuff like that. And it's like, you know, we don't really come to any conclusions because it was just a head scratcher. It really was. All I can say really is the saving grace is that boxing has been so good overall in 2017 that we can definitely stand, if in almost any recent year we could stand to just have a kind of throwaway pay-per-view, or not necessarily a throwaway pay-per-view, but a pay-per-view with just a really crap verdict, this would be a pretty good one, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, that being said, let's close it on out, Bryn. What do you say?
I think so. I think we covered the bases, and I know that you are going to have trouble sleeping given the fact that Rigan Dial might lose that knockout victory and have it declared a no contest. But I want you to know, Patrick, things are going to be okay. There are bigger problems in this world.
I will say that I am intrigued by the fact that a guy who is so in control and possesses so much control over his body in a boxing ring kind of lost control there. And, you know, I mean, even if it was just a little smidge, just for a moment, that's all it took. But that's kind of the same thing for Rigondo. Rigondo, interesting. All right, there's a headline.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, it sucks. But we will be back fairly soon when the next crazy boxing thing or boxing / MMA thing happens. But everybody who listened in today, we appreciate it. I know Bryn appreciates it as well. It's always a good time. And if you would do us a favor, follow us on Twitter. Follow Bryn at Brynicio, BRINICIO. Follow me, Patrick Connor, at Patrick M. Connor. Do all of us a favor and like the Knuckles and Gloves and Knuckles and Gloves Boxing Radio pages on Facebook. And if you listen to us on iTunes or go back and listen to us on iTunes, whatever, throw us a little rating. That always helps, kind of bumps us up in the little ratings department on iTunes and makes everything better, makes everyone happy. Bryn, we will get back together soon, my friend.
I look forward to it in a platonic way, Patrick.
The most platonic of all ways. All right, everybody. Take it easy.
Take care.